A beautifully designed Squarespace website is the difference between thinking about photography school and selling your portraits online. It's the difference between giving away those cookies you just made for free and running your cookie empire. A beautifully designed Squarespace website is the difference between having a movie reviewing hobby and a movie reviewing career. Squarespace, because no matter what you're into, a website makes it real. Use offer code THEDIFFERENCE for 30% off every plan. Terms and conditions apply.
Fall is a vibe. So, what's yours? Do you go wild? Or get a little nostalgic? Do you like to cozy up indoors? Or kick it outdoors? Whatever you fall for, get shoes that get you. We've got the trends. You bring the vibes. DSW, let us surprise you.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Episode number 26 of the Sal Sports and Stuff podcast. Going to get right into it here with my special guest, Joe Goodberry. Now, Joe's been covering the Bengals for about 11, 12 years now, podcasting, a couple different platforms. He's decided to no longer do that. But I think his story about how he got into it, why he stayed into it, in it, and why he's leaving now is super interesting. It's going to resonate with a lot of you. So we talk about a lot of that. We talk about Joe Burrow going to the Bengals now, where they could go with him at quarterback. And he is a Western New Yorker, even though he's a Bengals fan and has covered the Bengals and talked about them. So he's got a lot of thoughts on the Bills. We'll get into that as well. Really fascinating conversation with Joe Goodberry, who does a tremendous job. I think you're going to really like this one. Sal Sports and Stuff podcast, episode number 26. Here is Joe Goodberry. Joe, thanks for doing this with me. I know that we've spoken before on WGR, but you know, your story as far as, you know, not podcasting anymore and kind of leaving the industry, if you will, in some capacity, really resonated with me on a lot of different levels. So I wanted to get into that, but also because I don't want to lose you, man. I mean, like, you're such a good resource for Bengals stuff. I've really enjoyed your content, so thanks.
Thank you very much, Sal. And, you know, we'll get into the story, but that's the part that's I don't want to confuse people with. It's just I'm not going to do it in any official capacity anymore. So I'll still be around as a resource. And, you know, I love football still, so I'm not leaving it completely.
All right, so good. So you'll still be tweeting out your takes about the Bengals, right?
Sure.
All right. We can look forward to that, of course. And you can find him on Twitter at Joe Goodberry. So let's talk about, you know, I listened to your final podcast, if you will, your farewell, you explaining, you know, why you were making this transition. And you did a great job of going through the lineage of why you started, how you started, and, you know, how you ultimately ended. So if you can, just let's go back to that again and maybe revisit it here for me and my listeners, if you will. Tell me what got you into wanting to podcast, what time period this was, and how it all happened for you.
Yeah, it was about 10 to 12 years ago. I'm 33 now, so at the time I'm 21, 22. You know, I'm a young man. I'm not sure what I want to do with my life. Probably with anyone who's probably that age right now can probably, you know, resonate with that and understand where I'm coming from. And I loved sports, loved football. I grew up with football and baseball as my two primary sports. And at the time, I knew nothing about the industry at all in terms of what it took to even have a voice of the team. You know, you read things in the paper or online or listen to people on the radio, and you don't know how they get to that point generally, or at least I didn't. And, you know, I remember when Twitter was just starting and you know, you'd read the takes of the people that write about the team and cover the team daily. And there were so many times that, like, I didn't understand why is this person not a fan of the team? Did they not grow up with this team? Why did, you know, where is the angle they're coming from? And I now, 10 years later, I look back and I understand why people sometimes are negative towards writers that maybe are just giving a unbiased opinion of that team, and they can't understand why that person isn't a fan. But that was me 10, 12 years ago. And I was like, you know what? I want to write from a fan's perspective. I want to have a voice from a fan's perspective. I am a fan of the Cincinnati Bengals, but I wanted to be able to, you know, give a different angle. And at this time, it was when blogs were really starting to explode, and you could have your own podcast or your own internet show or whatever the case may be. more voices were starting to come to the table and have representation in different ways. And I just think I got caught in that upstart at that point, and you know, grew a name for myself and a brand. And podcasting really didn't start until like 3 years ago, when, you know, it's podcasting for me. When 3 years ago, when I was starting to get asked to come on other shows, and they're like, hey, we want to talk Bengals, or we want to talk to you about the NFL draft, or just football in general. And I'm like, okay, yeah, people listen to this stuff. This is awesome. This is cool. And then there became an opportunity 2 years ago where they're like, hey, we would like you to take over this podcast for a guy that's leaving and going to cover another team. And I took it up, and we did really well over the last year. And even though the Bengals were terrible, and people may not know this from the outside, when your team's bad, you don't get a lot of clicks and don't get a lot of listens and downloads and whatever you're doing. So, you know, from our perspective, we like when the team is really good and interesting, but we ended up doing really good. And I think, at the time for me to leave was just a decision that, you know, I thought about for a long time, and we'll get there, but that's how I started. It was as a fan, it was as someone who wanted to have a voice and give a different perspective. And it just, you know, everything just fell right for me.
Well, so it's really funny to me because it's right around the time I also started podcasting. The big difference here is, though, like, I grew up, and maybe you did, you could tell me, what did you want to do growing up? Because I wanted to do this. Like, this was my life dream. I grew up wanting to be Van Miller, Rick Jeanneret, Rick Azar on Channel 7, or Ed Kilgore, you know, I mean, John Murphy. These guys were my idols. I wanted to be a sports broadcaster. I went to Syracuse to do this. It doesn't seem like that was your plan in life growing up, and not that you're in it as a career necessarily, but did you want to do that, or was it just something that you decided to at that point?
Yeah, I didn't want to do it. It wasn't that I wouldn't have done it. To me, like when I, in high school and stuff, when it was kind of sports, I was always drawn into the analytic side of it, mm-hmm. the player evaluation side, the why is he doing it rather than what happened, you know? And that became, like, when I first started, it was, I want to do draft work, or I want to watch players. I want to write scouting profiles and player evaluation. I want to grade players on what they were doing. And that was like the first 5 years of my writing and internet career, if you will, was just player evaluation. And it wasn't ever, I never wanted to like report on the team. I never wanted to break news. You know, you'd get information and I would be like, you know, I'll just sit on it because it helped me as a person that was evaluating players or as a draft analyst or prognosticator. And I never wanted to report. I never wanted to follow them day to day. I never wanted to do the podcast part. I liked doing my little niche of Bengals content. And growing up, like I said, I knew nothing about it, how to get into it. For me, my career choice or anything, I went to college for about two semesters and said, yeah, this sucks. I don't like this. And I stopped going. And I went and got a job at a local plant in Western New York. And I've been doing plant and factory work now for the last 13 years. And that, so all this that I do for covering the team is in my free time, is in my spare time. And I did it because I love doing it and because people kept offering me opportunities and money. So I will always take that. And it became very hard to turn that down after a while.
So you talked about, you know, the network you're on. It's Locked On, right? This is the Locked On,
yes.
Locked On Bengals podcast. So I can go back to, now Locked On is fairly new, obviously, you know, it's in the last several years. So when I started podcasting, here I was, I had left radio, I went into teaching, I was coaching and all that, but I really wanted to get back into it. And I happened to read about this thing called podcasting. And I'm like, what is this thing? I have no idea what it is. Same time you basically were starting to do it. And the network that I affiliated myself to that I caught on was called MySportsRadio.com. That was the name of it. And it was a guy named Sam Cooten. He was out in California and he started this thing and he had to explain to me what podcasting was. I had no idea.
Yeah.
And he said, this is going to be the future of the way people listen. I'm like, all right, whatever. You know, it sounded like some guy, you know, pitching a penny stock. I don't know. But I'm like, okay, well, if it's a way for me to talk about the Bills and a way for me to put something on the internet and who knows who hears it, then who knows? Maybe something will happen. But what happened was early on, it became more of a joke for people, right? It became more of, you're in my basement. Who is this person? Ha, ha, ha. You're just opening up the internet, pretending to be a sports talk show host. Where there was an ends to the means for me, there was an end to the means, a means to the end, whatever you want to call it. You know what I mean? There was a goal in sight.
Yeah.
Did you ever experience that when you first started, or were you just like, no, I don't care. I'm just doing this for a hobby and I don't care what people think.
No, there's always, you always get that part. Even if you're doing it for a hobby or if you're trying to make a career out of it.
Right.
It 10-12 years ago, it was a joke. It you even got it from other writers or other people that were, you know, people that were established were like, you're just some blogger. You're watching from home. There was always the jokes they gave me. I'm like, man, and I don't know if my seat from at home is worse than yours in the press box, but you didn't see that play correctly, buddy. And you get into arguments with that because, I mean, and I get it. You almost were encroaching on their turf, and maybe there was a little bit of a threatening angle when you're a guy from the basement, if you will, and your mom's basement, and people are listening, gravitating towards you. And maybe you're just good at it. Maybe that was the hard part for traditional media to understand that, you know, these, and at the same time, you know, we have seen newspapers struggle in that time frame, and maybe some of that is because of guys like us that have been able to create a niche and create an audience from our mom's basement, if you will. But it never was from my mom's basement again. Right. But it was, you know, for me, it was a hobby, and it was a I'll do this as long as people want to consume the content, and it just grew. And I think now you look at it, and everyone's got a podcast now because it is a huge thing. Mm-hmm. I'm just amazed at the amount of numbers. And you look at this, you're like, yeah, 10,000 people downloaded it today. You go, what? Where are these 10,000 people listening? Where do you find time to listen to a podcast? Even for me, as a guy hosting one, I may find time to listen to a podcast once or twice a week. And so you're very appreciative of the people that can do that. And it's just amazing to me how much the landscape has changed in this 10 years.
Yeah, I even researched Sam Kooten the other day to find out what he's doing. I'm like, this guy was smart. He was ahead of his time. I don't even know. I don't think he does it anymore. Or he's out of the business or whatever. But for someone to have the foresight and to say, hey, this is where it's going. And of course, after that, you know, it's lots of tentacles. I started video casting and things like that. And of course, as people know, you know, I broke a big story. Terrell Owens comes to Buffalo, whatever. I kind of put me on the map and everything. Was there a moment?
I remember that. So.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. And people still say, and I always tell the story real quick. I had to decide. Like, I had this information that I really trusted the person who gave it to me. But Joe, I mean, we're in this situation where if I put it out there and I'm wrong, now I'm really buried, right? Like, people are like, haha, you're making crap up. You're throwing stuff against the wall. You just want a name out there. But if I don't put it out there and it happens, I missed my shot. So, you know, I had to take a leap of faith. For you, like, were you ever a guy who tried to get, you know, the inside stuff, try to get news or stories, or were you just really approaching it more from, hey, I'm watching the game and this is what I see and here's my analysis?
Even when I didn't look for it, it's sometimes information would find you. Right. And it's mostly because I would be, let's say I
that's a great way to put it, by the way. I didn't look for the TO news either. It found me.
Right. It's weird how it happens. I mean, you've got so many different situations of how information gets to you. And like if one example of a time I'm watching or I'm broadcasting a film review, I'm streaming it on Twitch or something at the time. And this was like 3 years ago. And I get a comment of, no, you're wrong on this play. And you get that all the time. So you don't think anything of it. And then the guy starts like commenting more and more. And it's some random burner account name with a bunch of numbers. And you don't think anything of it. And then I get back on Twitter afterwards, and I've got DMs from a coach from the Bengals telling me, breaking down the play for me, and it just starts a relationship. And then he starts sharing information with you because he seems to be like, hey, you know what you're talking about, and they like, you know, and those guys like to That's talk awesome. Sometimes. Yeah. And then it becomes, we really like this guy during the draft, or I don't really like that guy. And I never share that stuff.
Sure.
All what I did is I allowed it to maybe steer my analysis a little bit or my projection. Like, oh yeah, the Bengals like this guy. You know, I think they could take him in the 6th round range. Now, I've done my own evaluation, but knowing that they also like that guy doesn't hurt. You know, I keep that to myself. It makes me a better analyst. So because you're supposed to have two sources. You're supposed to have multiple sources if you can. You're supposed to back things up. So I never wanted, like you said, you don't want to wade into those waters if you have a little bit of uncertainty on it. And just one guy telling you something isn't enough information usually to go and run with it, unless you like feel super confident like you did with the TO thing, because it's not worth the risk. Yeah, I'm already coming from behind, being in the stance you are in the waters of all the media. You don't want to do that and don't want to risk your entire reputation on something silly like that.
Right. I think for me it was 06, because if I remember right, and I could be wrong, It was right when the Heat had won like their first title. Just for some reason, I remember like that particular time period that just stands out. Like when I first started it, I remember like the Heat being on TV and winning. That would have been 05-06. And then there was another like NFL show I did with a guy named Johnny Vaughn, who actually passed away a few years ago. And he would do the Bears one. I would do the Bills one. We did an NFL one, and it was really cool. And then from there, it kind of grew. And they had all they had a wrestling one, you know, at mysportsradio.com, just like Lockdown. Lockdown has really grown because of this. I mean, this has become big business. Can you kind of just maybe put in perspective like how quickly this has grown, how big of business this has become?
Yeah, I mean, I've only gotten the numbers the last 2 years, you know, when I was with the company, and every year it's grown about 100% in not only revenue but listens and downloads. And Google partnered up with us to, you know, every day they want for each team related information in a 5 minute segment, a 1 minute segment that'll play. So like if you say to your Alexa, give me the news on the Bengals, we will play for you. It'll start playing our podcast. So like, that's a huge thing, you know, once you get to that level. And they've got a show for every team, every sport, and it's a daily podcast. So they want, you know, you wake up in the morning, you're on your way to work, you're commuting, and you're going to get a new podcast. And that's the idea. So it's a grind, but it has exploded. I mean, during the draft week, we were a top 15 podcast, sports podcast on iTunes, just the Locked On Bengals. And of course, it was a big week for us. So we had the number one pick. But at the same time, that's crazy. I mean, to even get that high for a network like that, they have exploded. They've done a really good job. The formula and the plan is working, and I think they're, you know, it's going to be more of a household name as it keeps going.
All right, so Joe Goodberry, by the way, joining me here on the Sal Sports and Stuff podcast. So I go back to that time, and part of the reason I wanted to recall when I started doing it is, so here are the Bills. They go on this 17-year playoff drought, as you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, right at the time, they'd only been out of the playoffs like 4 or 5 years when I'd started doing the podcast. And then I do the podcast for a few years. I come back to Buffalo. I've been covering the Bills up and, you know, until they finally got to the playoffs a couple of years ago. Whether it was in podcast form or in professional media form at WGR, you know, that's a good 10, 11 years of my life. Now, granted, the Bengals had made the playoffs, but very similar for you. You've covered a team that has not had a lot of success. In fact, they have one of the longest droughts of not winning a playoff game in the entire National Football League. So what's it been like for you to kind of be on board here through all these really mostly thin times and not a lot of thick times?
Yeah, it's 30 years now since the last playoff victory. So, you know, as like I said, I'm 33, so I can't remember one. You know, I think I do, but I used to watch a lot of NFL films with a kid, so I can't tell if it's a real memory or not. But yeah, it's, you know how it is. It's a lot of second guessing. It's a lot of saying, no, this player's good, and then the team doesn't sign him because how many games have they won with that guy, right? Stephon Gilmore type thing for you guys. You know, you get to a weird situation of, for the Bengals, they have had really good teams. Marvin Lewis brought stability. So my time of doing this was under Marvin Lewis, basically, where they were close enough to be competitive and be good enough and be interesting, but falling short of the ultimate goal and really looking like a top tier team or something that would be respected nationally. So it was always a weird balance of never knowing if 8-8 was the goal or if, you know, they're actually pushing for it and trying for it. Because as an organization, they always came up short when in terms of spending money or acquiring free agents or being aggressive or really maximizing the team. I mean, they went to the playoffs 5 straight years from 2011 to 2015. And they rolled over like $10 to $12 million in cap space every year. You're like, man, when are you guys going to go for this? When are you going to spend that money and really bring in some free agents? And they never really did. And then that all falls apart the last few years. And you know, they let Marvin go and try and start over new with Zach Taylor and now Joe Burrow. So it was a situation where you're always defending sometimes to the national media or the national perspective of, no, they're a little bit better, or this guy Carlos Dunlap is really good, he just doesn't, you know, you guys aren't really hearing about him, to Bengals fans of saying, hang on now, guys, they're not that good. So it's a weird balance.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You know, look over their Pro Football Reference page and it just stands out at you. Lost wild card, lost wild card, lost wild card, lost wild card, lost wild card. 5 years in a row. A couple years before that, lost wild card. Go back to 05 was the first time they made the playoffs in a long time. 1990, of course, the last time they'd won that playoff game. As you're thinking about the transition here and coming up in Joe Burrow, I want to get into the parallels between, you know, the Bengals transition and your transition as well. So you now are exiting at a time where I would say a lot of Bengals fans would say, hey, man, what are you doing? Like, we got this great quarterback coming in, the number one pick. How could you leave now? Tell me about the decision to exit, you know, doing what you're doing and why you're doing it now.
Yeah, those coincide. They really do. There was a lot of time for me, especially in like 2012, 13, 14. The Bengals were good. They're making the playoffs. But at that time, I'm like, yeah, you know, guys, I'm not sure Andy Dalton's that good. It was a weird thing. When you got a young quarterback and your team is going to the playoffs, Sal, you probably have experienced this now, where it's like, okay, the quarterback is good enough to get you there, but I'm starting to have concerns if he's ever going to take that next step that's required to beat these elite quarterbacks in the playoffs. And a lot of my analysis centered on defending my opinion that I'm not sure Andy Dalton is an elite quarterback. Because when, you know, in year two, year three, if the guy is putting up 2-to-1 touchdown ratio and 65% completions, fans are pretty happy and you're going to the playoffs. So it's hard to criticize a guy at that point and show film or data that says, you know, there may be some things here to concern us. And so a lot of my reputation has been on evaluating quarterbacks and saying at a few key times that, you know, the Bengals should probably draft a quarterback here, whether it be 2017 when they draft John Ross and pass on Pat Mahomes and Deshaun Watson. I'm sure you've discussed that draft and that decision a bunch in your last few years here, too. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's been years where it's been like, guys, they should probably take a quarterback. They should probably take a quarterback. They should probably take one. They should, you know, how about this guy? How about this guy? And that was me. And at first, it was a lot of people like, you know, Joe, you got to give Andy Dalton a chance. And then it became, you know, I think you're right. And this team probably should finally, you know, make a decision here and stop settling for just being good enough. And so as I was going in my career and there's became a few times where I've had to turn down, like we started the saying, I never really chased the gig to cover the team every day. And then I got offered by The Athletic to cover the team and be a beat guy. First time ever, like getting, like that would have been huge. The Athletic has exploded, and I have written for The Athletic for the last 3 years, but I never, it's been as a freelance job because they said, I said to them, I said, you know, I don't live in Cincinnati. And they said, oh, we didn't know that. And they pulled the offer basically at that point. And that happened a couple times. And it was to me, do I move my family and take less money from my current situation? And it wasn't worth it. And I made that decision. And when I made that decision, it was, well, I guess I've reached the end of the line. I've probably gone as far as I can go doing this. If I'm not going to take that bold step and doing that, and if I made that decision twice not to do it, and you know, I think the writing's on the wall there that you know you've gone as far as you can. So it coincided with that and the Andy Dalton thing, and the Bengals finally getting to the point where they can draft an elite quarterback. Where I feel this. I think Joe Burrow is fantastic. I loved him at LSU this past year. I think evaluation wise, he's everything I'd want in a guy I'm taking number one. So when that coincided, it was, all right, I can go back to being a fan, enjoying the game, taking a step back and really feeling like this team has a chance and I don't have to prove anything from a writing perspective. I've finished everything I want to do in terms of how far I can go with the media. And now the team is in a better place. They spent $140 million in free agency. They drafted a quarterback number one. I'm feeling like mission accomplished.
Yeah, so I want to go back to your the Athletic offering you the job to be a beat writer, beat reporter. Let's get into that for a second, because when I heard that originally, and I'm like, how do you not do that? But no, that's me, right? I'm like, how can you say no to something like that? But you know, everybody's different. Everybody's in their different time of life. Like, why did you say? I just. Make people understand or help people understand how you can turn down what would be, I would say, a dream opportunity for most people.
Yeah. At that time, I was a year into a new job here in Western New York. We just bought a new house. I mean, I think 2 months before I got the offer.
When was this?
This had to be 3 years ago.
Okay.
So yes, yeah, it'd be about right now, 3 years ago.
Okay.
And maybe even back a month, 3 years ago. But
so 2017.
Yes.
Okay.
And they called, and out of nowhere, man, I mean, I didn't even know what The Athletic was at the time, but I could tell a lot of people were starting to sign on. It was right at that point of like, okay, who's The Athletic? And oh man, Jay Glazer signed on or whoever, you know, it was a situation of like, oh, this might be something. And the amount of money they were offering, I mean, I could tell why a lot of people signed on. They were offering money. And so that is also part of why would you turn it down? It was just the fact that I don't, you know, you never know how long it's going to last. You see people get laid off in writing all the time. You see people or websites that go down after 2 or 3 years. And I lived in Western New York my whole life, and I've had a good job. I know I said I got a plant job and factory job, but there are some good ones in the area where you can make good money. And that's so it, for me, three young kids, married, just bought a house. I was like, whew, okay, could I do this? And I know I could, but is it worth it? Is it worth the risk? Is it worth chasing my dreams and putting my dreams above being able to support the family better? Because it would have been a pay cut to do that, and it would have been some lost money on moving and things like that.
Let me ask you, is your wife from here?
From Rochester.
Okay, so she's from Western New York. Like, what was her input on this? So I'm sure you guys talked about it. You're like, yeah. What did she say?
She's super supportive. I couldn't have gone this far without her. I mean, she was like, of course you chase it. Of course you do it. Of course, you know, we'll be there and support you. And she's always down to move somewhere. Right. She's way more adventurous than I am. But so, she's super supportive and would have done it. But then I'm always the reasonable one in terms of, well, let's think about the money. Let's think about the kids. Let's think about, you know, the situation and how far would it set us back? How many years would it set us back? What if it goes under? What if it doesn't work? And that was my mindset. And I thought, well, they're still, it's not like they're pulling the offer completely. It was, well, you can still write for us and be a freelance writer, but it was a salary position. So it really wasn't even freelance. It was decent money at the time. It was, it was $2,300 a month to write 5 articles a month. And I'm like, I could do that. No problem. Right. And still make my money at home and do what I'm doing. So I was like, you know, that's the alternative. It wasn't turn it down completely and not make any money. It was, you can still make money and just have to turn down the dream opportunity. But like I said, when I started this, it was never the dream. It was, so that was a great offer. It was just, I do think about it once in a while now of, should I have taken it? Because now the Athletic is still going. Now, you know, the team is very interesting. Where would my life have gone at that crossroad?
Yeah, it's hard, man. Look, I remember going through that same battle. You know, ultimately we did. I will tell you though, my wife was, you know, in transition of jobs, and she had said to me, like, hey, and she's the one that told me, look, I mean, if you really want to go to Buffalo and get back in radio, you know, let's go do that. She's the one that kind of pushed me to do it. But I had no like full-time gig lined up. WGR said, if you move up here, we'll give you some part-time work, but then you got to make money however you can make money until something else breaks. And I substitute taught for quite a while up here, but it was a bit different. But I think the thing that stands out, what you're saying, and what stood out to me too, just the stress and the scary part of thinking about all those different things that go into it. I think the big difference to you, you have kids. I didn't have kids at the time. We didn't have Max till I moved up here. Way easier when you don't have kids to think about in this scenario.
For sure. And part of the reason it's funny too, because when you have kids, you gotta start thinking about their futures more than yours. For that 20 years you had that, right? If you live 70 years, 20 of them are with your kids, you kind of got to focus on them on that time period. I mean, you got your career, you've got to live your life too, but your kids are there for a short period of time. It goes fast. My son's already 10. And so 11 years ago when I was really thinking about this and found out my wife was pregnant, that drove me to do it because I wasn't making that much money at the time. And at the time I was like, you know, it's now or never, Joe. You need to go, and if you want to chase this, chase it now, because it's only going to get harder once they get older and you're taking time from them to do 2, 3, 4. I got paid from 5 different places last year trying to do this, whether it was writing, podcasting. I do an advisement with a sports betting place every Friday where they call and ask about the Bengals for 15 minutes and they pay me. There's little stuff like that. I was always, okay, I'll take the money because I'm thinking of the family and the kids. And, you know, I didn't grow up with a lot. So for me, if someone's going to offer you to do something and it's easy to do, which talking about football for me always is, you take it and you do it.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I used to joke all the time. I felt really bad for my accountant every year because I would have a radio income, a TV station here, writing something there, substitute teaching on the side. It was pretty crazy. So I totally get that. So now that you can sit back, you can analyze everything that they have done. You can go forward and, you know, give your analysis both as a fan and come on shows like this. Let's talk about Joe Burrow. I want to tell you something I heard Carson Palmer say, and you tell me if you think that's fair, not fair, or how it might impact Joe Burrow. And what he said was, he said he didn't really realize, you know, what it was like to be in an organization that truly put all their resources into trying to win a championship until he left Cincinnati and went to Arizona. Is that fair? And does that mean anything bad for Joe Burrow?
It's fair. This is a comment you get from a lot of people that leave Cincinnati, even all-time greats that have the utmost respect for the organization. I mean, we had Willie Anderson on the podcast recently, and he went to the Ravens afterwards. And he goes, as soon as he stepped in, it was like, whoa, this is different. They're actually trying to win. I didn't know that there was a difference until he stepped foot in Baltimore. And so I think it's fair. And I think when Carson Palmer says that they didn't put all of their resources into winning. They're a family-run organization. I mean, they're owned by the Brown family that has, you know, comes from the legend Paul Brown, and you know they don't have money coming in from oil or another business or whatever the case may be. They're not these, you know, multi-billionaires with unlimited resources. So the way they handled it, and that's not to put excuses on them. I think for me, the competitive drive is you try and win and use all resources available to do it. But they never have. And they've got the smallest scouting department in the NFL by far. If you go look at their webpage, they have two scouts listed, and that's it. You look at their Ravens, they've got 28 people in their scouting department. So you kind of wonder if there are shortcomings coming that way. But I do think there has been some modernization since 2003 when Carson Palmer came in. And the 90s were a dark age for the Bengals. Even early 2000s, they were still finding their footing. Marvin Lewis came in, and while he got some leeway, he got some of the power taken from Mike Brown over the 15-year period. It was very incremental and very slow. And then Carson Palmer was gone after 2010. And I think more – and then they go to 5 straight playoffs after that, after Palmer left. And Duke Tobin, who's come up with the organization since, I think he's been with the organization since 2001. He's now their de facto GM, player personnel, or director of player personnel. And he's grown into that role more and more and more. And you can tell the way they drafted is different. The way they approach free agency was different. I got to talk to him down at the Senior Bowl, have a conversation with him. And you can tell that they're modernizing through him. He's really directing and pulling strings back there as Mike Brown's getting older and the organization's starting to see things a little differently. And then they spent a lot of money this year in free agency for the first time really in a long time. Biggest splashes they've ever went out and gotten. Guys like DJ Reader and Vaughn Bell and a few others and Trey Waynes. And, you know, you feel like, well, okay, so if they're going to use that part of that resource, maybe they are onto different things. So it is fair to say from Palmer's perspective, 2003, when he came in, probably a much different organization just in that, you know, 17 years of age from Mike Brown and really taking a step back and now he's in his mid-80s to where he was at the time, really controlling the team and overseeing everything.
Yeah, and, you know, by the way, I do know that Palmer went to the Raiders for a couple of years, but he was speaking of, you know, specifically when he went to the Cardinals. Yeah, so just so everybody knows, I know he didn't go directly from Cincinnati to Arizona, but he was talking about that wherever I read it or heard it. It was a little while ago. You know, and then you have the Bengals here who, the way another media member may have said it recently, I was listening to one of the national shows, and they said, you know, they're this team that generally they just take their draft picks, they, you know, have what they have, and they hope to hit on a few guys, but you're right. I think it looks like a seed change a little bit, and some of the money they're starting to spend. They've never been a team that really has pumped a ton of money into bringing in free agents. It looks like they're trying to surround Joe Burrow a little bit here. But what would scare me is, hey, you know, are they happy with, hey, we got the number one pick. He's going to sell tickets. We think he's really good. And, you know, whatever we get from him, we get from him. And we're gonna help him a little bit. But we're not really, you know, we're here to make some money and stuff like that. And would that be something that's hindering a guy like Joe Burrow? Do you think he has everything he needs to succeed in Cincinnati the way they're currently constructed?
That is tough to say. I mean, there's not enough evidence for me to feel confident. I mean, one offseason of them spending money is great, but it's not enough. I mean, there's going to be a point, and here's the point where it happened for the Bengals, when they got to, you know, 2011, Andy Dalton and A.J. Green are rookies. There's a lot of people thought that they would be in running for Andrew Luck the following year in 2012. And they go 9-7 and make the playoffs with those guys being rookies and carrying this team. And all of a sudden, they hit on their drafts, like 2011, 2012, 2013, and next thing you know, people are saying, man, the Bengals and the 49ers maybe have the two most talented rosters in the league, and this is like 2013-14. 49ers made it to the Super Bowl then with Colin Kaepernick, you know, a couple years in that range, or 1 year in that range, a couple years after, but they came to a point where you have to decide, are you going to jump through that Super Bowl window, or are you just happy with it being open and rolling the dice? I remember a quote from Mike Brown that really stuck out to me. He said, one of these years, the ball's going to bounce our way in the playoffs. We just got to keep getting there. And I hated that. I was like, oh my God, that's not the way to approach it. That is, the ball's just going to bounce your way. What, four times in a row in four straight games in the playoffs in the Super Bowl? No, that's not going to happen, actually. You better build a championship roster and team if you want to actually, you know, beat the Patriots or the Steelers or whoever's in the playoffs at the time. So they got to that point of deciding, do we maximize this roster? Do we maximize this cap, especially with a quarterback on a rookie deal at that point? And they did not. Like I said, they're rolling over cap space. And I hated it at the time. And I was calling it out at the time of, guys, they're not doing enough. I know they're making the playoffs, but they're not doing enough to get over the hump. So they're going to get to that point again, hopefully, right? If Joe Burrow's good, if the team is good. And I do think the team is far more talented than a 2-14 record would say. I mean, if AJ Green can come back and be healthy, and I know he's over on the other side of 30, and typically those guys aren't great still, but he doesn't have to be anymore because Tyler Boyd is one of the best slot receivers in the league. John Ross, while verging on being a bust, has 10 touchdowns the last 2 years and can make plays. And then they draft T. Higgins. Auden Tate last year had a surprising year too. They're five deep of premium picks at wide receiver for the most part. Auden Tate was a seventh rounder, but he's definitely outplayed that. You'd bring in T. Higgins, you're like, okay, you're really good at receiver. Joe Mixon and Giovanni Bernard is fine at offensive line. At running back, they need offensive line help. So the tools are there, and they've tried to retool the defense this offseason. So will they be in position next year, the year after, to fight for the playoffs? I think they will be. If Zach Taylor is the right guy, I think we still need to figure that out. So they're going to get to that same point again. Can we maximize this roster before you break the bank for Joe Burrow and pay a quarterback? Because we see what happens to teams when that happens. Can you do it in that short 4, 5, 6 year window that you may have? And I don't know. I hope so, but I guess we'll see.
Now, Tua may be great, but I was glad they did not sell off that number one pick to the Miami Dolphins, who seemed to be offering the world, right? I mean, they could have taken a boatload and they could help their roster and still get a quarterback, whether that's Tua or Herbert or whatever, if Dolphins maybe get to 3 or even at 5, I don't know. But I was glad they didn't do that as a guy who has to watch the Dolphins twice a year.
Yeah, and they apparently they liked Herbert number 2, so it would have been Herbert, which would have been an even bigger dagger. That was the thing. People send you little mock drafts online, right? And you know, they do the mock draft simulators. They send it to you, and they say, what do you think about this? And it would be a trade back, and they take 2. And I'd be like, well, no, take Herbert. And they're like, oh, I don't want Herbert. I'm like, well, then you don't want the trade back. So it ends right there. Quarterback, first and foremost, on any trade situation. Do you love the quarterback that's right there? Yes, then you draft him. And you know, that's it. End of conversation.
That's
right. The Bengals felt the exact same way, so I was very happy we saw eye to eye on that.
All right, I want to get your thoughts on the Bills because you do live in Western New York. You're from Western New York. You watch this team more of an outsider's perspective than someone like me, so I think it's valuable here. And I'd like to ask you before you even get into that, why are you a Bengals fan? How'd you grow up a Bengals fan? I mean, Joe, that's rare to grow up in Western New York and not be a Buffalo Bills fan.
Very weird and very rare. Actually, my barber is a Bengals fan, too. Right around the corner from me. So there's a few guys. There's a guy in the neighborhood also is a Bengals fan. So there is a few. You know what's weird is, so I was born in 87. There was kind of a bit of, now this is secondhand because I was a child, and my dad used to talk about it a lot. As a Bills fan, he is. The rest of my family is. But the Bengals and Bills played each other a few times in the 80s in the playoffs, and there was a lot of controversy, a little bit of the Bengals running some no-huddle stuff, and from my understanding of the history, is Bills players would kneel down or act like they were hurt in order to slow down the Bengals' no-huddle. They had a really good fast offense in the late 80s. And then the Bills kind of copied it with the K-gun stuff. And my dad used to say all the time, oh, no, you know, we got that from the Bengals, but the Bengals were cheating then anyways. And, you know, so I remember thinking as probably like a 5-year-old, what are the Bengals a rival to the Bills? You know, you really don't know anything. And having an older brother who was a Bills fan, I said, I'll take the Bengals. They got cool helmets. And, you know, that's how you choose your team sometime if you're not choosing a local team. It's stupid, but sports are generally stupid when you look back on them. So, you know, picking a team based off that, I just stuck with it. I never really wavered. I wanted to a few times. You know, here's a story. 2002, the Bengals had the first, were going on having the first pick and drafting Carson Palmer. They were so bad. They weren't on TV at all. At this time, I'm a mid-teenager. I wanted to watch my team play, and they're never on. And, you know, Sunday Ticket really wasn't a big thing yet. But now it is. You can watch your team from anywhere. So, but at the time, I'm like, you know what? I was born in Tampa Bay. My dad said to me, you don't have to root for the Bengals. They're never on. Who are you watching mostly? I said, well, the Buccaneers are on all the time on Fox. Maybe I'll watch them this year and really keep an eye on them. And they win the Super Super Bowl that year. And I watched maybe 10 games of Buccaneers, and I really enjoyed it. And I had a great time rooting for that team. Did not see one Bengals game because they were so terrible. And they won the Super Bowl, and I sat back and go, well, that sucks. You're not supposed to like a team and they win the Super Bowl the first year. That's cheap. And they drafted Carson Palmer. I'm like, all right, I'm back on the Bengals then.
That's funny. So I'll tell you the story. So you go back to 88, and yeah, they did. I mean, Sam Weish, they were running a no huddle. They were up tempo. They were running a fast offense. And yep, there were teams in the league that would happen, where teams would allegedly have guys like sit down, fake an injury, whatever, to slow them down. So they get to the playoffs that year, and the Bills basically complain to the league that they weren't giving like defenses enough time to substitute or something like that. Whatever the complaint was by Marv Levy, the league basically told the Bengals, like, you can't do that. Like, you have to slow down or something. And it became a really big deal. And of course, they go to the AFC Championship game. Derek Burrows has a horrible penalty, gets kicked out of the game. The Bengals wind up winning 21-10. They were the better team anyway. Icky Woods, you know, that was his time period. What I remember about that year, though, in 88, was they get to the finale. And in the finale, the final week of the year, the Bengals, all they have to do is beat the Washington Redskins, and they clinch home field. And if they can't and the Bills win, the Bills get home field, and whoever gets home field is probably going to the Super Bowl. I mean, it was that big of a deal in 88. And the Bengals are playing a Redskins team that really wasn't that good, and they go to overtime. But the reason they went to overtime, Chip Lowmiller for the Redskins missed a field goal to beat the Bengals. And if that happens, if that field goal goes in, the Bills are at home in 88 instead of the Bengals, and the Bills probably go to the Super Bowl that year. But because Lowmiller misses, they go to overtime. The Bengals win 20-17. I have the box score in front of me right now. And that was a rivalry, if you will, because of a lot of that stuff that went on because of the no huddle. And yes, of course, a couple of years later, really it was, it was later that year, whatever, however it happened, the Bills did have the no huddle offense start 2 years later. It was 1990 when they really went to it. But yeah, that was the origins of how all that started.
Yeah, and that makes sense to me how my dad was describing the Bengals at the time of, you know, cheating because they were running this no huddle stuff. But that's funny. That could have kicked off the Bills dynasty had that field goal had been made by the Redskins. Could have kicked them off, 2 years earlier than it actually did.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, so tell me real quick your thoughts on the Bills. Josh Allen, you know, what do you think about this team as you watch them from afar?
I think Brandon Bean's done a great job. I think three drafts in a row now, they've really crushed it. I love the way the way he moves around, makes trades, goes get his guys. I think the roster is very, very talented, very good from almost every single spot. And even like the coming into this draft, I'm like, oh, they could probably use another running back. They could probably use an edge rusher. You know, they didn't get a first round pick because they traded for Stephon Diggs, who I loved. He was fifth round pick. I had a first round grade on him, Sal. That's one of my guys.
Wow.
Yeah, I know, right? Coming out of Maryland, he was fantastic. Anyways, I'm like, they probably still need a DN. It's hard to draft defensive ends in the second, third round. They probably won't get one. They'll probably struggle there. They've got a lot of guys that'll kick inside and rush. But they, you know, I really didn't like their edge rushers coming into the draft. And then they get AJ Epenesa, who, if you'd have told me in January that's who they're going to take with the first round pick, I'd have said, great, good job. Even though I think he's going to kick inside some and play in there. They got flexibility. And getting him in round two, slam dunk pick. You look at Zach Moss, I think he looks like Marshawn Lynch at times, right? Like a knockoff version where he runs so squatty and makes guys miss, and it's hard. First guy never brings him down, ever. You throw on some Utah tape, guys don't bring him down. That's very similar. They've got a type, I think, even though Moss is bigger. He can catch, so can Singletary. But Singletary doesn't get taken down by that first guy ever, either, when you watch them in college. So I think they've got a type there. Break tackles, and we'll figure it out. You don't have to be a blazer or a burner. So I like the roster. I like the way it's constructed. I think they have very few holes. I think maybe at corner they could probably be attacked a little bit, and let's see if Norman can bounce back at all and be serviceable. But other than that, they are very, very good. And it comes to quarterback then. It's going to be the conversation. It probably is for you guys 90% of the time because the team is so good in most spots that it's all on Josh Allen. And Josh Allen himself, the conversation is polarizing anyways, however you felt about him coming out of college. And I wasn't a fan because of the inaccuracies, because of the inconsistencies. But if you're playing at a small school like that, it's kind of like my at the end of the day, I had the same thing as everyone else was. He's a little too inconsistent, a little too inaccurate. but God, he makes some beautiful throws and plays and he's athletic. But then you came to, but why is he inconsistent and inaccurate? He's not dumb. He's not, you know, a guy who is like an athlete more than a football player. You kind of go, well, he's just kind of disjointed, his upper half and lower half. Sometimes he's throwing with his feet off base or off platform. Sometimes he's not, you know, even turned the right way and he's throwing it. Sometimes he deals with pressure in different ways. And talent around him, you start to come to those things of, okay, he's trying to play hero ball a little bit too much and just backyard football in it a little bit. So maybe with some coaching, he can be better. But typically, those guys don't get drastically better in the NFL. That's at least always the opinion I held. But recently, we've seen these high upside quarterbacks. Quarterback is a long conversation for me because you look at the league and a 93 quarterback rating is the average now in the NFL. I mean, quarterback has never been played at this level before ever, and it's only going up. So who are the difference makers now at quarterback? It's the guys that can create plays, the guys that can go off script, second reactions, and make something happen when the defense calls a good play. And Allen can do that. And all of a sudden, I start looking at Allen a little bit differently of, okay, so maybe some of the routine stuff, maybe seeing blitzes sometimes he's a little bit off. Maybe sometimes in the pocket he drifts a little bit too much. It throws a little off balance, but there are times he takes over and he runs or he makes a crazy throw with his arm and you go, yeah, that's a difference making play. And it's probably outbalancing in a good way the negatives or the routine stuff. So if they can keep working on the routine stuff, and it looks like they did from year one to year two, you're like, okay, there was a jump in development, at least a significant one, that he was definitely better. He still has a ways to go. And if he can go that way and take another same jump into year three, his 23-year-old year, which is very important to me. I've looked at data. It looks like between 22 and 23, these guys typically mentally catch up to where they are physically, or physically catch up to where they are mentally. It's different for every guy. Whether it's Pat Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, last year was Lamar Jackson, his 23-year-old year. Joe Burrow, 23 in college. Sometimes it happens in college. Sometimes these guys come out at 21 and they don't hit that jump until year three or year two, late in year two. And I think Josh Allen and Sam Darnold, same similar age, could have that jump. And if he does again, I mean, we're talking Buffalo is a top three team in the AFC at that point if he does that. And I think they're still probably competing for the playoffs and probably a favorite for the AFC East now. But if he takes that another jump, they legit have a chance.
Yeah, look, you brought up Darnold. I'm a Darnold fan. I don't think his jump has been where Allen's jump has been. You know what I mean?
Like, no,
he came in more polished, but he's kind of plateaued since he's come in the league. He's had some phenomenal moments, of course, but from where Allen was, which was below Darnold, I think they're pretty much on par. And I think you're right that this is a big year for both of them. And the way I've put it, and you tell me if you agree with this, if you look at the organizations and, you know, as a Bengals fan, you can maybe relate to this and how they've treated their players in the conversation we had earlier. I've said this on the air, and I believe this to be true, Joe. If Josh Allen was in New York with Adam Gase, I think he'd be a disaster. And if Sam Darnold was in Buffalo with Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott, I think he'd be phenomenal.
Yep. And that's the difference between picking top three and, you know, having to move up and get Allen where the Bills did. I mean, Darnold should have went over Allen in terms of being at USC and being he's got everything you want. He can move. He's got a strong arm. He's a smart dude. He just turned the ball over a little bit too much and was a little bit loose with it. I compared him to a Ryan Fitzpatrick, Jameis Winston kind of guy, where if you can get them to control it, you've got a good player. But oftentimes they, you know, revert back to being a little too risky. But with Adam Gase, there's no chance. He looks like the same guy that came out so far.
It's player development. That's what it comes down to, is how you develop your players.
And that's why I say he's 22 years old. I think in June he turns 23. And usually that's what I mean. So maybe 2020 is that jump for him. But, man, I'd bet against it with Adam Gase being the – I don't know. How does Adam Gase still have a job? It's crazy to me. And so if he doesn't hit that jump, they've just wasted a young prime pick at quarterback. And sometimes that's how it happens. There's been guys you've liked that have succeeded because of the situation. I look at the Jets and say, you know, the offensive line's bad, the receivers are bad, and Adam Gase is a joke. You guys are killing Sam Darnold, and you're going to ruin your chances. Where I look at Buffalo and I go, they've signed seven offensive linemen last year. They've signed two receivers. They trade a first for a receiver. They draft two running backs. They're doing what you're supposed to do. They've got 3 years of the same coordinator. Allen's taken incremental jumps each time. Now if he takes the 23-year-old jump this year, like I said, I really think they'll be really good. But if not, that's the other part, right? What if he doesn't take that jump? I think then it could quickly flip where fans are going, Allen's not the guy. We got to figure it out. And I don't know if that's fair or not, because – like I said, we were kind of in that situation with Dalton, but Dalton never had the upside that Allen does. I feel like I'd still want to give Allen two more years of, okay, can he do it? But a lot of teams get in that situation, right? After year three or four, where they're like, do we pay this guy the record-breaking deal, the big money?
You got to take the fifth-year option, too. You got to make it after that third year, which is a big deal. Like, look at Trubisky and what happened there.
I hate that the fifth-year option has to be done after year three. I mean, I typically you've got a good idea after year three. But sometimes guys like Allen, who are developmental all the way, you know that as soon as you're making the pick. You're not sure after year three sometimes. And to pick up that option or not. I mean, imagine if you're the player, right, and the team does not pick your option up after year three. Like, man, well, they don't believe in me. They don't like me. The trust isn't there. I mean, what is the situation from the player's perspective? You almost never see that guy resign. Even if Shaq Lawson has that year four that you'd be happy with and would keep him, it's you already kind of made that decision in year three.
Joe, this was really good, man. I really appreciate it, and I kept you quite a while, so I appreciate your time today. I know you're not going away forever. We're going to miss your coverage in a professional, a format that's, you know, just I don't know how to describe it. You know what I mean? You're going to be doing your whole thing. It's still professional, but probably the wrong word to use. But we're going to be missing it in that capacity. But I know you're still going to be out there giving people Bengals content. So if you have anything you want to plug, go right ahead right now. You could do that. Your Twitter, whatever that is.
Yeah, and I never felt like a professional sale. I was always just kind of doing it from a fan's perspective, so I appreciate that. To even say it's semi-professional, it's a professional sale. Yeah. You're right.
You're a pro at what you do. We're not going to see it in the same format, but we're still going to see you around and listen to you, and I'm still looking forward to that.
But Twitter is the place. I mean, I'm always down for a conversation with anyone. I mean, I've got fans of other teams that follow me and conversate with, you know, especially a lot of Bills fans that do follow me. So I can talk pretty much every team and have a good time in football and sports in general. So find me on Twitter at Joe Goodberry, just the way it sounds.
Thanks, Joe. I appreciate you doing this today.
Thank you, Sal.
Girl, let's get real. Some pads are just diapers with a good PR team. But not the new Kotex BioCare. That's because Kotex BioCare helps defend against odor and irritants. And it's the first and only pad with this pH proactive system that helps optimize the pad's pH. Just think of it as self-care for down there. Check out Kotex.com for more details on the all-new Kotex, completely redesigned to meet your needs. You asked, we heard.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
People say, I got you, all the time. Dads say it to their kids the first time they ride a bike. Friends say it to other friends when they buy them lunch. It's a good thing when someone's got you. It's especially good when someone's got you with important things like your health. And that's where WeShare's got you. We got you with a massive nationwide network of over 1 million doctors, which means you can likely keep your current doctor you know and trust. We got you with affordable prices that can save individuals up to $5,000 annually compared to traditional insurance, and save families even more. And we've got you with over 68,000 CVS Caremark pharmacies across the country. If you're tired of overpriced health insurance bills, come visit us at WeShareHealth.org or call 1-888-WeShare. Other smart Americans are making the switch every day. In a world filled with companies that cost you, it's nice to have one that's got you. WeShare Health. We got you.
Keep cool out there, folks. It's going to be a hot one.
We the people love summer baseball. The food is over the top. The cheers come from the chest. We came with friends, but we met new ones. We have seats, but we're standing. They say it's anyone's game. But from what we can see, it's everyone's. Baseball for the people.
Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane.
Youch. Did he have any hot sauce?
Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snap's infinitely refreshing!